You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to TKF United, Stadium Talk that rocks. It's also your favorite San Diego, well, one of your favorite San Diego sports podcasts about soccer.
And, there you go, yeah.
And football and basketball. And
you know what? I'll go ahead and let you claim it as your favorite.
Yeah, it's my favorite, yeah. Where's the finest football podcast been?
It exists in myth, legend, but also in reality at the San Diego Chronicle, sdchronicle.org.
All right. Well, the voice you just heard was DK Aniwo from the Chronicle.
Hello, thanks.
And we got Drew Steck.
Yo.
From the Locals.
Yeah, we have
the
a Locals podcast now. Yeah, all we right. have it since we last podcast. I made one because DK was not putting anything. His live on a Patreon, a very looped Patreon on his computer, where if you go over to his house, you can listen to him at this point. But it's tough because you got to edit these. We had one that we recorded the other day that we haven't put out too, so I feel you. It's tough to do it on a schedule, which we're doing here now again with the TKF United.
TKF United, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're also joined by Cesar Hernandez, yeah. Who's a soccer writer all over the region. He's been featured in ESPN and The Athletic. And you also have a podcast, too, the Mexican Soccer Show.
Correct, yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
yeah. Everybody's got a podcast here.
I know. Wait a minute.
I mean, it's 2020, right? Like, if you don't have more than one podcast, what are you doing?
What
right?
are you really
doing?
Yeah,
exactly.
You have a business card, you have a podcast.
Comment, leave a rate and review on all the iTunes pages that are in this room. So. But yeah, hey, we got a what's the update on the Mission Valley Stadium site before we get started?
Oh, straight in.
Let's
so
do it.
They told
straight
us
to the
it would be ready by 2022.
Okay,
that is what they're still saying, but it probably won't be.
All right.
What? Anybody? Shocking. I know. Newsflash.
Yeah. Well, they did pass it with the CSU and. That's big news. That seems like the biggest hurdle.
Yeah, I think the city attorney has a few different issues that need to be sorted out before they can move forward. And then also, just like the actual contract with regards to like how is this getting built? Is this a labor thing? Is this like a prevailing wage thing? There are a lot of issues kind of behind the scenes that have taken this sort of process off of its desired trajectory is what I'll say.
Right. Well, I guess when it's actually finalized, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll have more gray in our hair. I can assure you of that.
We'll be it'll be after the next Olympics if that ever happens. Yeah,
the Olympics are this summer, so yes, it'll be after that.
Maybe in the winter.
All right. Well, you know, the Aztecs won the election 2 years ago, and the friends of San Diego State. And that left
legally there was a distinction. Yes.
That's a good clarification right there.
It is. It seemed like a big deal at the time. I remember
they were very clear.
Corrected several times on this podcast
in this room, this very room.
But you know the Soccer City movement kind of regrouped and started a new franchise called the Loyal, and that's happening this weekend. Finally, we're getting real professional outdoor soccer at Torero Stadium, Drew.
Yeah,
how
man.
Pumped are the locals, the supporters
pumped.
Group?
Not tired right at all. Definitely don't need to sleep for the next 2 days to be ready for Saturday. But no, overall, it's like honestly the adrenaline and really the excitement of thinking of something on this level, which is just another level up from what we did last year in terms of level of play, but just kind of more on a bigger stage in terms of exposure with ESPN and stuff like that is just all really exciting for everybody. But It's nice to have a different community that's moving in and trying to create something together that's different. So it's been fun to be a part of, hey, how do we do things that are not what we've done before as a city? And that's been kind of fun, yeah.
Now, is there a European club or a club around the world that has a supporters group that you guys are kind of modeling after? Or what are your influences?
So heavy influences locally, you could say, just up the road from the 3252 in terms of setup. And what they did was they said, hey, we're going to create a umbrella by which we can have multiple supporters groups be part of one union. And so technically our structure is that we're an actual union by which multiple groups can come emerge. And we've actually talked to a few groups that want to do that, and we'll have different maybe names and styles and represent cultures that are more subcultures within San Diego overall. And our goal is to be the umbrella by which representing San Diego as a whole to say we represent everybody and we're here and acceptant of everybody to have a space to express themselves in that way. But also in doing that, you can't say that we're specifically for North County or South County or East County were for, you know, everybody, right? And so that's where if you have a culture that's specific to a heritage or to an area, right, you're going to be able to express that through the locals, and that's how our setup is kind of similar to that. Timbers Army is actually more of a hand in glove as well. They have what they call 107ist. That's their union, and then Timbers Army up in Portland has that kind of setup as well. And then there's pockets within that, subgroups within that, but that is kind of their overall moniker is Timbers Army that has some other stuff, but it's lesser, you know, factionized, more like LA is. LA is more kind of factional groups that are part of this 3252. I'd say we're more like Timbers in that way, but our setup, if you're looking for something more kind of that's been on TV a lot, that would be similar in terms of what we're looking to do and how we're trying to represent the club is sing, stand, and they make a whole lot of racket up there. That's what we're trying to do here too. So just noise, really.
Noise, yeah.
Bring the noise.
I've been very subtle here today on this Wednesday, but yeah, it's noise.
DK, you were at the friendly a couple weeks ago.
Correct.
Were you a part of the supporters group and you were involved?
Yeah. My seat was definitely in section 109, which is kind of where the locals like to hang. To be fair and to be honest, I stood outside the section. I just stood right at the top for the majority of the game. I don't think I actually sat down. But it was noisy. It was definitely noisy. It was bouncy. We anticipated rain. It didn't actually rain, which was nice. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing like how all of the preparation, all the hard work, all of the just like commitment that's been put in over these last few months by the locals manifests here on Saturday.
It was pretty impressive too that just you had, because I contacted a club front office member and they told me that it was 3,000 plus that showed up to this game. And I think that that's pretty significant when you keep in mind that this is a USL club that was taking part in a friendly. This wasn't the home opener.
Right, this wasn't the
first match ever, for a first official match ever for this team. This was a friendly, and you had 3,000 plus showing up, and you had an immense amount of support from locals. Like, I think you got to give a lot of credit to the locals because that kind of gave a hint as to what you're going to see this upcoming Saturday. Because I think it gives a lot of hope when you think about the San Diego community. We think about the San Diego soccer community, about what this team can provide and what, I don't know, how relevant it is to the locals as well.
Yeah. I mean, are there any signs about like what we're going to see on Saturday about attendance wise? I mean, you know,
it should be sold out, right?
I'm sure that the goal is to sell it out. I have not personally seen any numbers, but I strongly suggest all of you people do is tell all of your friends to be there and buy tickets. I was walking someone through buying tickets earlier today, and they're like, oh, there's not very many seats left.
Yeah, what would sold out be?
5,000, right? Is
I
it 5,000?
Yeah. It's like just about 6,000.
Yeah, it's 6,000.
Oh, 6,000.
Venue.
Okay.
And I
yeah.
think the way they're doing it with some on field and some behind the stadium seating, the capped capacity, I think it's like 6,500 maybe.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. And that's standing room full completely. Yeah. So I think some anywhere in the 5 to 6 range you're looking at what you would deem a attendance sellout essentially.
And what was the, so for the friendly that, you know, drew 3,000 people, what was the pregame like?
It drew 3,000 people or drew 3,000 people.
I mean, Drew, you might as well answer this. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm looking.
So you were also looking at me, so that was just a confusing turn of phrase.
But, like, how did people, lack of a better word, how did people party before
the
game?
Was there a tailgate?
Were there keg stands?
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. So we had our pregame. And so part of what we've been fighting the whole time, we talk about this on our podcast a little bit, so there's a plug. But it's more if you want to get into our issues. We're not going to have to broadcast those on everybody else's thing.
Yeah.
So it gives a kind of public service announcement to our members and anybody else who's just curious what we're up to. But USD is very much a campus first. It's very much for students first. Therefore, they don't love people drinking alcohol on their campus.
Yeah.
It's just generally something that when you have 3/4 of your campus is under 21, you're not a huge fan of when you're academically focused and traditionally just not a party school or in traditionally more Catholic and Jesuit basis. So due to that, they've always kind of had a contentious relationship with selling alcohol at the school. Luckily, they do. And luckily, we worked them down to selling us $4 beers at our pregame. So for the price of what it would cost you to go anywhere else within a stone's throw of the campus, of which all of them are uphill hikes, you can hang out within about just a few steps from the campus, come to our pregame and $4 beers right there north of the Jenny Craig Center. And then we do a march directly into the game. So you get checked in for the game. You can eat your food. You get Belinda's. Everything on the menu is under $10. Three tacos for $6. So like stuff like that. Really affordable. So you can get two beers, tacos, You know, all that kind of stuff for around like $20-$30 for you and a couple other people. So
I think
it's
you're
really
downplaying a little bit. Actually, like from an outsider perspective, I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought that it was genuinely fun because I was a little worried at first when you, when I thought about the limitations that are brought with this venue.
Traditionally, you hear tailgate. You think Qualcomm. Yes, right. People growing up here think of rolling up to Qualcomm or Jack Murphy, whatever you called it. Pulling out the back of your truck and doing whatever the hell you felt like until you went by the stadium.
But when I showed up to that like pregame thing, like I had a great time. You know, I thought it was like a lot of fun. I thought it was interesting too that you guys were offered, or they, I guess you should say, USD offered $4 beers. And as long as if you can't have beers within the venue as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's just like you can have, and they're decently priced as well. I forgot it was like $8 for, I think it was like 12 ounces and $10 for a full pint, if I remember correctly. So,
yeah, for
I mean,
stone beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can still have a great time over there. Yeah.
So it was fun. It was good. And I tried to kind of put the precursor as myself. I grew up tailgating in that lot in the big stadium. So I get what tailgating means. So we try to call it a pregame. People do want to call it a tailgate. We'll call it a tailgate sometimes, but in jest, kind of a like tail, bum's tail.
I mean, is there going to be like a designated place like a bar where everybody's going to hang out before going,
and that's part of it as well, is like, is there somewhere around there? So far we've seen a few different places that are like this a lot. Coronado being really nice to us, you know, Home and Away in Old Town, which is a little bit more of a hop and a skip if you want to have places that you want to kind of Uber in from, are kind of good places to hang out that sometimes have food and drinks. And then you have places even like Bay City over in the Midway that aren't too far, which is a good place to park your car where you're close to a freeway and then you don't have to deal with any of the in and out stuff of
ingress
parking your
and
car.
Egress.
Yeah.
Technical terms.
Yeah, and it's a place to go back to possibly after the match as well. So all those places work that I would recommend personally, but generally we haven't settled on a certain location. We do have some partner breweries that we're actually teaming up with for trying to get our members percentages off and things like that, but we haven't nailed on anybody who's like right next to USD yet.
Okay. Cool. Well, so what are we going to see on the field, right? I mean, we have a big matchup. I mean, the big thing that everybody's talking about is the matchup between the head coaches, Landon Donovan and Eric Winalda, two legends of the men's national team and, you know, pillars of the MLS and all over the world, basically, you know. What do you guys think about that matchup and how significant is that? Or should it be more focused on the players?
So I chatted with Winalda. Actually, I chatted with Winalda and Donovan recently. So I chatted with Winalda last week. And I doubt he's going to talk about this podcast, or I doubt he's going to listen to this podcast. I feel okay talking about this. I was supposed to interview him for an article.
Winalda or?
Winalda.
Landon definitely listens to this podcast.
Landon might listen. So one of the first things that
he's actually right outside.
Yeah, one of the first things that Winalda told me was just like, I don't want to talk about Landon. I'm not going to answer questions about Landon. And when I chatted with him and I interviewed him, he made a point to focus on just the players. And actually, after I finished the interview with him, he apologized. He's like, hey, Cesar, I'm so sorry. I just want this to be about the actual players on the field. I want this to be about the actual, like, the actual team out there, as opposed to this Landon versus Winalda
manufactured, I'll dare say, sort of narrative.
Well, he said something about Landon's,
but he has
coaching.
We can't ignore that.
Seemed like he walked it back.
But if we want to be fair, yes, I mean, like, so I believe there was a radio interview in 2018 where Winalda called Landon entitled. And I think we have to bring, I think that's important. Like,
it's important to the narrative as to why,
exactly, yeah,
why
yeah.
ESPN can sell this match
exactly,
based on
exactly,
these
yeah.
two guys. It's not like they don't have a history.
And Winalda has also
tangoing each other with words a little
bit. And if we want to be fair, Winalda has also mentioned in the past that he's been disappointed. I'm going to say, quote, disappointed with Landon. And he mentioned that after Landon decided to support the Mexican national team in the recent World Cup. For me, it's less so of a Winalda versus Donovan thing, and it's more so of just like an old school American soccer versus new school American soccer. I think Winalda's kind of emblematic of a 90s American kind of like soccer guy, where these guys didn't get like immediate training. These guys were just kind of like building the foundation that basically
Alexi Lawless is that voice currently on Fox for a lot of people who watch some of the broader coverage.
Exactly,
Alexi
yes.
speaks to not exactly Eric's viewpoint, but it's a previous earlier generation.
It seems like the 90s guys, the previous generation, a lot of them, this is what I took from Winalda's interview from Darren Smith last week. It was like a lot of the guys from that generation went and started the MLS and sacrificed maybe going to Europe or going to bigger clubs get that off the ground. And so they kind of look at the next generations as these entitled
silver spooners.
Yeah. I feel like it's just like, oh, respect your elders.
You wouldn't be here if it wasn't for us.
Exactly. Eric Winald is a smart but curt kind of, he has a personality that is a biting personality.
He's a striker.
Yeah.
aggressive.
Yeah.
See, and he went to San Diego State. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, so he's got that edge, man.
That's in the room.
You know.
That's in the
but what I thought was fascinating when I was chatting with Winald is like, yeah, he did mention it. He wanted to be about the players. He was like, once again, he apologized to me and said just like, I want this to be what's happening on the field. But at the same time, he also mentioned that he recognizes that San Diego is going to bring a certain kind of fire to Saturday's match. He recognizes that because it's San Diego's first USL match, he recognizes that these players could be completely amped up. And I think that what's going to be important for him is for not only him to be composed and for him to be kind of on the level, for his players to be on that same level as well, because San Diego's players, once again, this is something he recognized. I think he knows that he's going to have to combat with a team that is entirely fired up on Saturday. So I think that'll be interesting to see.
Well, generally, we also have done research. So, I mean, we also have figured out that his goalkeeper's name is Thomas Olsen and that he played for USD actually for a number of years. So we're looking up the past matches he blew in that stadium and saying, remember this game. Oh. And so we
Are you going to call certain games?
We go deep here. And I think Winalda knows we do our research.
You were standing over there.
Specifically,
the
from my angle, I'll say that
you
he knows we're
going
to bring that fire. But I would, to that point, though, I would say that he knows. Do you think there is, and not to stoke that fire, but some jealousy maybe? Like, he's in Las Vegas. It's a decent soccer market, but he knows this is a better soccer market than Las Vegas.
I mean, in some terms.
Not in every term, but in some terms.
When I asked him, it was just like, do you believe there could be a rivalry between the two sides? He 100% recognized the fact that both cities are destination cities, you know, so he at the very base level, you're probably gonna have a lot of back and forth between the fan bases because of that. But I think that if I were to take a guess, I think that Winalda's holding a few things back. I think that the fact that he told me that he didn't want to talk specifically about Landon says a lot about what's going on in his mind, if that makes any sense. Yeah, exactly.
Good.
Exactly.
Yeah. From my perspective, but I would say generally I get it, and I think it's cool that he wants to be about the players, and that's a very manager mindset to have.
I think some managers want the deflection.
Like my manager at my European team, Spurs, he's all about bringing the controversy on himself.
You guys had a great day.
Jose, we had a terribly amazing day. Yeah. This is one of those where he sinks into the curtain. Today is where he's hiding in the curtain. But he's a manager, invites criticism onto himself personally to almost deflect it off his players. And some managers do that successfully, and he does even sometimes turns it, you know, to a heel perspective like wrestling. But, you know, it's – however strategically you think you need to handle it. And sometimes
I think it is strategic. I think it's 100% strategic.
He's smart enough to know that both of these markets are really important for the league, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's
yeah.
like
yeah.
he can't – I mean, he knows that Landon brings a certain amount of eyes, probably more than his profile. Yeah.
There could be a future where he coaches here. Who knows?
That's true.
Landon's a coach for 10 years, 15 years, and he just hangs up and says, I want to manage or whatever, or maybe gets called up to the National League. Who knows what the future holds? And then Eric is the choice, and Eric comes in. That could happen.
Yeah.
And infinite timelines, there's, you know, anything can happen, right?
Well, so what about the players? I mean, we should talk about them. I mean, one of our best players is coming from the light last.
Yeah, he was their top scorer.
Irvin
Parra, top scorer. I don't know that things went.
He's already got a red card.
I was going to say, according to plan in that first game. I don't know if they went according to plan for him in Las Vegas, right? You know, I suspect he would have maybe liked to stay there. But he's here now, and you know he's got a chip on his shoulder. Obviously, Joe Greenspan, the big center back, you know, reigning sort of USL Defender of the Year. The Joe says no chance. I don't know if that was pre-planned from last week.
That was completely organic.
Oh, that was great. Someone just started
yelling, Joe says no. And we're all like, within seconds, it was very viral. It just caught on. That
it's
was our COVID-19.
It's important to have organic things like that.
Yeah, the first few weeks are going to be really
our
important.
Jovid-19, if you will.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to that. You know, to segue slightly off the players is like more of that sort of organic, like, hey, this thing happened, and from wherever else, like, we're gonna refer to it as this. Right?
That becomes a banner or a T-shirt or like
instantly,
you know, it's
instantly.
Like yeah,
that's a scarf. Just, Joe says no, and the Mutombo finger wag.
I literally sent him something on the Instagram the other day. He did a video without color, and I said Joe says no, and then in parentheses to color, and then he liked it back. But yeah, it's like that kind of stuff. That's fun,
that's,
right?
That's definitely like, significant to kind of give like a character to San Diego, especially like the early foundational days of this team. You want to add a character to the team, and especially as I feel like I think San Diego needs a lot of character to begin with. I mean, just from like a bigger kind of like
high level.
Yeah, exactly.
And so these guys are characters. They're great, and they'll show up and talk to you, and they're very friendly too. They're very personable people. So
yeah, agreed.
I think it's exciting to have that kind of player access that like the Padres yearn for from a fan perspective. Like,
are they not accessible? Are the Padres not accessible?
They're more accessible than they've been, but they've always had a little bit, especially
since the players.
Yeah.
They're pretty guarded. I mean, they're pretty guarded.
By the time they get to this stage,
yeah, they're pretty polished. And they, I mean, we don't really even try to get access to them. They're just
Oh, no.
I mean, not really.
Unless they do like a social thing.
Is it difficult to get player interviews with the Padres? I mean, I know we're talking about soccer right here, but I'm fascinated by this. Someone who covers soccer.
You have to get cleared by PR, and we are cleared. I mean, I don't know. It just seems really difficult, and they don't.
You're almost lobbying in some ways. Like, you almost have to, like,
really?
Yeah.
We had, like, Jesse Agler on, who's he's a team employee. And that had to get cleared by, like, a bunch of people.
Really?
It was fun.
Inside baseball.
We should try.
Literally inside baseball.
I mean, but it's like, I mean, not to take
I mean,
this
they're
to baseball
not,
stuff.
No, but
this
is San Diego Sports.
So.
The thing is with the Padres.
It's important to these clubs, too.
I think that, like, a USL team or, like, you know, the Seals or the, you know, any other, the Soccers, they're looking for more exposure. I don't think, I mean, our numbers aren't going to, like, help the Padres
get
out there.
But that accessibility is still very important, though, right? Like, regardless of how important you are, right?
I mean, I think
there's that, but then I think also to your point, like, this is a fan podcast, right? I think you people do this because you love it, right?
True.
You love the culture and it's part of your lives. And so at a certain point when you have to go out of your sort of day-to-day when, let me get this cleared, let me get wait on this approval, like, the zest sort of comes out of it, right? Is what I suspect is the reason that, you're cleared, but you maybe don't, like, pursue it aggressively.
Yeah,
I mean, I haven't really been that interested in player interviews that much. I mean, usually they're so polished that they're not going to say
anything
interesting. But I mean, you know,
Eric Winalda back then.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's what's great about soccer.
Full disclosure, I DM'd Eric and he didn't DM me back to call in on this.
Well, he doesn't know, man.
As long as you don't ask about Landon, you'll be fine.
I mean, I won't.
Hope he isn't listening.
To that point, to that point, they speak their mind, right? Soccer players, they do more than other sports. They totally come out and speak. Them both Landon, both Eric.
But I think the new generation is definitely media trained. I think they're 100% trained.
They're better trained, is what we'll say.
No, but literally, my team today, one of the players launched himself into the stands because a player, a fan, apparently launched a racist epithet at one of his players. He was the captain and one of his teammates.
Yeah.
Somebody said something racist and he went to the stands after a player. And that was allegedly at this point, but. That's not something like Ron Artest, but like that's not something that happens in most other sports. But in soccer, you have these scenes where players almost interact with the crowd more so because they're so emotional in the game and they let it out and they do express it through them through the way they play a little bit.
Yeah.
And baseball has some of that, which is why it's sad to not have it expressed in interviews because when you see them open up, it's really interesting. But that's what I like about some of the access to these guys. They generally want to be. To expose their sport, but also just generally talk to people. Even at the highest stages, they'll sit down and kind of give more access and more ideals. But especially here with this team, has been really open and really awesome to this point.
Yeah, I mean,
they're very accessible early.
And both teams, 1904
and sorry to cut you off, but like they're very accessible earlier. I mean, for example, during the scrimmage, like so there was a scrimmage earlier today, and like Warren Smith was available, Landon was available, like the players were available, and like I know a lot of people probably don't care if I'm like, oh, the from a media perspective, how easy it is to have like access to these
players.
You guys
were kicking a ball around like with them, just like hanging
out. It's true.
It's
true. Yeah, you saw that video.
Yeah. It was on the internet. Yeah.
But that's important too, just to kind of relay those stories over to the public as well, because the public don't have access to those players sometimes. So we're the gatekeepers sometimes to kind of give those opportunities to kind of like show that like these players are human, that show these stories for these players as well. So I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I saw one of the interesting players this that's coming on the team this year is a local kid. His name's Cal Izzo, or how do you say his
Sal
last name?
Zizzo.
Sal Zizzo.
That was a bit. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, he's from here, and, you know, I mean, what do you guys know about him? I mean, is he...
Well, his family owns restaurants in Little Italy, yeah. So that's one thing to know. So watch your back when you're saying his name.
trying to get a meal on India Street.
Yeah, right? But no, he's generally seems like a very affable dude. He's been around. He's a journeyman in some ways, but he's gone to a lot of successful teams and played on a lot of really successful clubs all around America and a little bit overseas as well. But most notably, recently with Atlanta United during their championship season. Also had a really good run with the Portland Timbers as well, where he created a food cart called Zizzo's Appetizos that people want to see come back here. So we'll see if that happens here at some point. People are very much anticipating that something like this would happen here. So we'll see. But he is kind of the anchor in terms of age and leadership, if you will. And also just kind of being, you know, having mostly the most probably like notable career in higher levels on the team. But in terms of his play style, he typically has been a defensive winger. But in this team, it looks like they might use him a little bit more than kind of a midfield defensive capacity. But we've yet to see a lot of him in the preseason. So we'll see. He's also, you know, minutes managed, right? He's also a little bit, he came out of retirement for this. So he's got to probably, I'm guessing he's in great shape, but also it does take a little bit sometimes to get back into playing shape for anybody who's been off for any serious period of time. Yeah, if it's like 3 months, you know, you come back in and you're like, I go 2 weeks off at Barcata. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm in that kind of shape, you know.
I know. What kind of style do you think they're going to be showing this season? I mean, for an inaugural season for a league that's trying to get bigger, like, can they be bad? They can't be bad, right?
So I think we talked about it a little bit before we walked in here as far as what we want to see, right? At a certain degree, we just want to be entertained, right?
Right.
You know, I don't think anyone who has, like, a brain is expecting this team to walk in and win the title in its first year, the first two or 3 years, right? But as, to your point, a new club, establishing a brand, establishing a style of play and a culture of play, the most important thing for me in the stands is to be entertained, and I think that's something that they're aware of. Having had conversations with some of the coaching staff and a couple of the players, it's like, no, like, we're on the front. I mean, they've scored a number of goals. They've played, I think, 4 preseason games. They've won them all, some by, you know, just one goal. But I mean, their most recent game, they went to a team that finished second in the regular season and scored 4 on them. They were up 3-0 at one point, you know, and that includes direct free kicks, that includes, you know, plays from open play, that all kinds of different things. So, you know, counterattacking play. I'm expecting to see goals from this team. I know that they have sort of defined themselves, or described themselves, I should say, as a team that is not really stretched from kind of top to bottom. There's a lot of guys clustered around a certain median point. Their average is very tight as far as like their average skill set. It's a very deep roster. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult for them to make as a coaching staff on a day-to-day decision, is it this person or this person? It's more so about form and sort of chemistry at the moment as opposed to like ability. So, you know,
normally, like what I was talking about with Sal, like you would know where he's going to play.
Yeah.
We don't, because they're so deep around that area. We just don't know where they're going to slot him. Are they slotting him left, center? You know, we don't know any of that because they're so deep, as DK's saying, especially in that kind of midfield, which is always where you want to push the ball through and get different combinations.
And I think what's interesting too, just building off of what DK was saying there, is that when I was chatting with Landon, he told me that he has the benefit because of his role with Ente, because he is also the EVP of soccer operations, that he doesn't have to think every Saturday, am I going to get a win? Am I going to get 3 points? He can have a long-term goal, and he can have this long-term goal of just being like, I want to build this identity of being an attack-minded team. He and through that, what might end up happening, what I guess is going to happen because of this 3-5-2 formation, is that you're probably going to have very attack-minded and exciting soccer that might lead to a number of losses. But I think, nonetheless, I think it's going to be a lot of entertaining soccer. Like, I 100% think we're going to see entertaining soccer. Regardless of a win or loss, we're going to see some very, very exciting soccer. You're going to see...
watchable. And for a lot of people who are just getting into it, who have never watched it before, very watchable.
You're going to see end-to-end play. You're going to see chances created. You're going to see goals saved. You're going to see spectacular moments. You're going to see mistakes.
And,
right?
and I think that's important, too, because I think it's very, very significant in the first year, in the foundational year of this team, that just qualifying for the playoffs might not be that significant. Gaining a lot of fans, a lot of casual fans, a lot of casual soccer fans who want to see something that's entertaining on the field, that's more, I think that's more significant. I 100% think that's more significant, especially in a city that might not be well aware of the details of USL or the details of how the USL structure works or just how soccer works to begin with. I think it's very, very important to have a very entertaining product out there. And I think that Landon is his approach is actually I think it's practical. I think it's very, very practical. And then once again, I think because he is the EVP of the Loyal, he has the benefit of being able to have this long term approach.
Yeah.
So Bill Belichick.
So like a more conservative approach.
No, I think it's gonna be attack.
A conservative approach might actually win more games, possibly. But
yeah, perhaps,
he's
yeah.
saying I'm gonna have a more exciting
yeah,
brand.
I believe in baseball, you refer to it as the process. We're supposed to trust the process, and so Landon is in charge of the process, right?
Yeah,
and at the same time, he's the one implementing, right? And so oftentimes, what I think Cesar is getting at is that you have these situations where head coaches are felt like they are chasing results, right?
Exactly.
And their job's on the line because of results.
Exactly.
And so they make short-term decisions as opposed to these long-term things. And so this sort of juxtaposition with Landon wearing both hats is that he's now in a position to say, you know what? Yeah, maybe I might make a short-term decision for this reason, but it's not because I'm chasing that result on the night, right? It's because I can see this person needing to come up against the winger from the opposite team, so that way we can watch the film next week and say, hey, this is the kind of player that you need to improve against, you know, and things of that nature.
He's thinking in three dimensions as opposed to two,
exactly,
and so it allows him to be better, honestly,
Does Eric Winalda have that kind of freedom?
He might, but the question is, does he have that kind of capacity?
Yeah. Does he have the skills?
I mean, so when I chatted with Eric, he told me that he feels like he underestimated the USL. He feels like, or he felt that he could just kind of like jump into it, kind of figure it out, and just kind of be like this kind of like easy process. And that he kind of perhaps took it for granted. And I think that he had some challenges last year. So his team didn't qualify for the playoffs. And he's having challenges this and 2020 as well. He was candid. I mean, he told me in the conversation last week, and he told me that he wished that his preseason started a little bit earlier. He said that they had a late preseason. Mm-hmm. So if anything, that might be a good sign for San Diego.
I'm just going to keep banging this drum and say that sounds like an excuse in the making.
So I mean,
edging, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a breadcrumb.
So he told me that he wished he had a little bit more of a preseason. He's like, well, the club nonetheless elected to have the preseason start when it did start. So I think that it's looking a little. I mean, if you were to
hot seat. He's on the hot seat.
No, I'm not going to say it's a hot seat. I'm just saying if you're going to make a bet for this weekend, you're going to say that San Diego is going to win. Yeah. And the
Lights generally are a weird franchise. They've done amazing.
Yeah.
They're kind of like a minor league baseball team, but on crack. They're doing 17 different, for just one example.
That might be an understatement, to be honest.
They're doing 17 different jerseys this year. So they're going to have away jersey will be constant, right, I believe. And then their home jerseys will rotate. There's 17 different home dates for USL matches this year. They will wear different shirts. And each one goes towards a different charity and has a different fan design or whatever. So it is actually a cool concept. But just from like a marketing standpoint, that's what you're dealing with as a coach rein in that kind of insanity where they literally had advertised a foam party during one of their matches.
Doing the cash drop?
I think they did it at some point. Yeah.
Do you guys know about the cash drop?
No.
Apparently, so last year, it might have been last year, 2 years ago. So what they did is like they brought in a helicopter, like it was halftime.
No,
like they had like a helicopter. Like,
there's videos. Just look at
and
the
then just
drop.
Like, and what they did was just like this guy was just like dropping like
cash,
like cash,
money,
like onto
dollar
the field,
bills.
And players just players, we're just like fans ran on and we're just like trying to grab like all of these bills. I have no idea if they're going to do that this season, but that'll be highly entertaining if they decide to do that.
I don't know if you could have the cash drop and then take it away. You have to do
it. Yeah, that's one of those things. If you're going to start with it, then you might as well. You're somewhat obligated, aren't you?
I mean,
we got some video. Yeah, we got some video right there.
Perfect for this audio.
I'm not sure
media.
Warren Smith is going to do that.
No, but people are, right? They're literally just running around like just crazy people on a field under this helicopter.
But that
doesn't
is also
that lead to violence. I can
I could see that.
But that's
happening.
Also very Las Vegas like has fully embraced the gimmick.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's important.
But that is Vegas.
I think it's important in the USL to kind of embrace that gimmick because a lot of people talk about the Las Vegas Lights. You know, like a significant amount of people like the soccer world talk about them. Now, do you want to lean in so much that people are saying like, oh, you're the crazy team? I don't think Loyal intends to be that.
No, they want to be San Diego, right? So
exactly.
they want to be classy, but they don't want to be too shiny, right? They want to have
a
little sand in there, a little bit of grit. And I think that they've spoken to the market in that sense, and I think they know what their market is there, but there is a sense of once the ball actually gets rolling, literally, like how do they take that and run with that in terms of reaching all the different corners of the county that might have not heard their message yet or not aligned with their branding quite yet, and finding space for them. So yeah, it's just continues the cashier over here.
Do we? Is that video still up?
Oh my god! their
mascot is Elvis.
Cash is actually
no. It's not Elvis. It's Cash.
He's
Cash.
Like it's like a vampire and Elvis had a child, and he gives me nightmares. And I have a tweet ready to reply to him because he asked me why we can't be friends in a GIF, and it's keeping me up at night. But I'm wondering when he'll apologize for using middle American children via his work with the cartels before he came to Vegas. That's why he has that weird look in his eye, I swear.
Well, so at the end of the month, the Loyal are playing a friendly with the Cholos.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
I was talking to these guys about it beforehand. I think that Loyal have done so many things right. I think they've done an incredible amount of things right. But nonetheless, I feel like they still need to do a little bit better of outreach to the Latino community. And I think that by having a friendly with Scholes, that will help them. I think that will definitely significantly help them connect with the Latino community. So I think that's very, very, very important for them. So we'll see what the turnout is like. I did talk to earlier today to some front office members from Loyal who were slightly worried that there might be more Cholos fans.
They do show up, and they've been here for years. They won a championship. They're ingrained in the market.
If you talk about the big soccer team from San Diego, Tijuana, it's 100% Cholos.
I see their stickers on cars every single day.
And I've talked to people from Cholos, like the Cholos organization. They've told me that, like, I mean, because you have a capacity of about 27,333. Don't ask me about the 333. That's a weird kind of thing within the team. They're expanding to 33,333 right now with their team, and they say that about 25 to 35% of their fans come from the United States.
Every single game.
Exactly.
And you see them when you go.
If you do the math on 25 to 35%, that's the entire capacity.
Exactly.
Of Torero Stadium. You exactly. Know, 5 to 6,000.
So it makes a little sense why Loyal are very excited about having Cholos here, but at the same time they're like a little hesitant, being like, well, we don't want this to be kind of a situation where it's just like all Cholos fans showing up as well.
Well, there is a stadium down the road. They could
maybe go fill that one up.
They need to use it at some point until they tear it down. But is that going to be an annual friendly matchup, you think?
I hope so. Maybe even biannually is actually what I heard. I think they're supposed to do a game in San Diego and a game in TJ.
Oh, great.
That'd be awesome. Oh, yeah. That's what I figured. Yeah.
Wow.
I hope that's not breaking news, but my
we better fill up our section.
Breaking news right here.
And then they'll put 6,000 of us in one section, and we'll be like, this is big. Yeah, it's a big stadium down there if you've never been. If you don't realize, like, yeah, I always go, like, take that, Dean Spanos. Look at somebody building a stadium here, right?
And they're expanding. I mean, it's just like one brick at a time.
Yeah,
like
very slowly. Every time you go down,
there we go.
Every game you go, you get to see the progress.
Tomorrow.
It's like going to Disneyland in the 60s. Yeah.
But I do think, I mean, we talked about this before we started recording with, like, the two of you guys, but I think that I think that Loyal still need to make some inroads when it comes to working with the Latino community. And I think that if we're talking about professional soccer, I think something that we have to discuss as well is that there's another professional soccer team in San Diego starting their season as well this weekend, which is 1904. It's NISA. I know it's third division. Still, nonetheless, Loyal taking part in the second division, but NISA started last week, but 1904 is going to have their first home game of the third division this Sunday. And what I believe is that 1904 has done a better job of connecting with the Latino community than with Loyal. And I 100% believe that. No, that's true. That's very true. That's very true. I think that the advantage that Loyal have, though, is that they have a former Cholos employee who did content in English and Spanish is now within the staff of Loyal. So I think that Loyal need to really go out there and get some Spanish content out there. Because if not, I mean, it might not be in the mainstream. It might not be in podcast out there. But 1904, they averaged close to 3,000 fans every single game the last home season. Now they don't play at SDCCU anymore. They're going to be playing at a local high school.
But it's way less expensive.
Lincoln High, right?
It's way more
affordable. Yeah. But they could still potentially have 3,000, 4,000 fans. And these aren't people who might traditionally root for Loyal, because I think that's it's a little bit of a different group there.
No, but you're outdrawing the SEALs. I mean,
yeah, exactly,
in that case,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So like that's yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So they have a podcast. I mean,
I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be very.
No, but I'm saying relevancy wise.
Hey, the Loyal are going against Star Wars night.
Most people wouldn't think of 1904 as on that level,
exactly.
Or you know, above the SEALs. If you ask them, like, oh yeah, in terms of relevancy, but you know,
they are also professional soccer, but they don't get the same attention. And I think that's also worth noting as well.
But are you calling for more stuff on, like, you know, their website and more outreach certain neighborhoods? Or
I mean, here's the thing. It's like, how much stuff does Loyal do in Spanish? Like,
it's a call to arms. And honestly, they said in the beginning they wanted to do it in a lot of stuff or do everything dual language. So in that sense, like, hey, saying, hey, guys, there's a promise that you said you'd put out there. Where's the fulfillment on that? I'd say in some regards. And then the other part of that is saying, like, hey, there's now a void to be filled. It's also, we've only had one preseason game. So there's also a community that can step up and be there and be a lighthouse to that community as well, I think, within the fan community.
I think luckily for them, they've hired the people who could do that stuff.
Yeah. And for the locals, we have representation all over the county. We literally have our leadership and our grouping and literally all our addresses, if you plot them on the map, are like completely all over the county. And there's really no epicenter of like where we have more support than anything than honestly below the 8. So I would say that it's not indicative of like generally where people live, but I totally agree with you in terms of the kind of South Bay typical Spanish-speaking presence has been very low for a team that has a lot of Spanish speakers, has a manager that can speak dual languages. You know, it's not like they don't have that in their lexicon, but I think have not done a good job of at least calling to that fan base and saying, hey, here's a space where you can be you, and that we want to uniquely have that conversation with you, versus 1904 at least is invited an open space by which they can come in and fill it with that, and said, we're not putting any pretense on how you're going to root or how you're going
to
do it.
Which is kind of funny, because like when I've talked to 1904 supporters, it's kind of like, as I've chatted with them, and they've been like, oh, we need more diversity. And I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? They're like, well, we need more like mainstream soccer fans. Like,
it's just a bunch of those weirdos.
They want
supporters group or the
no just people I mean sorry. I mean for lack of a better word, they want more Caucasian people showing up to games.
To put it bluntly.
Yeah
I mean, you know, I went last year, that was fun. I mean, I went once.
but it's interesting, just because when you compare that, like, Loyal's going to have that 5,000. I imagine Loyal's going to be more successful. If I was to make a bet on which team's going to be more successful, I imagine that Loyal down the line is going to have a little bit more success, especially within USL, which has those ties to Major League Soccer. And I think they're probably going to have like around 5,000 fans. All that said, I think 1904, which is fascinating because they're going to have 4 of their 7 home games are on the same night as
Loyal games.
As Loyal games.
Yeah, so you almost have to differentiate.
And exactly. Which I think was a poor move from 1904, because the schedule was set first for Loyal. Because I think Loyal made an effort to not schedule their home games on the same nights as Xolo's home games. Because remember, you have the team down there. So no Xolo's home games and no Loyal home games.
You made a comment when it came out, and they specifically said, we thought about that.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
So none of those games are going to be at the same time. Now, 1904, their schedule came out afterwards, and perhaps there's some difficulty because they are going to be playing at a high school. Perhaps there's some difficulties because
there's definitely difficulty.
Yeah, schedules are tough.
But the same time, it's a little bizarre. It's just like 4 of their 7 home games.
I'd say it's more unfortunate than it is bizarre.
Okay,
I mean,
that's a better way of putting it.
USL took forever to come together with their schedule too. It took about like 2 weeks longer than normally does.
Well, they also had
teams
moving. Yeah, teams came in, games came out. But like, I think it's a valid data point to reference the fact that 4 of the 7 games are. But I don't know that there's too much context to ascribe to that right now.
That's fair.
I think we can definitely sort of extrapolate like what we expect, right? Because of this conflict of dates, we will probably see a striation, and it'll probably lean towards Loyal. But you said a second ago, I'm being undecided.
Oh,
but you said a second ago that you think Loyal will be a little bit more successful. And I think the first question that popped to my mind is like, how are we defining success? Right?
Yeah.
If we're defining by attendance, I expect there will be a higher number of attendance, right? But if you're talking about people like playing the game and like kids learning how to play and like kids being inspired and like professional athletes going and playing at the best of their abilities and seeking, you know, opportunities at the next highest level, it's way too early to be saying that.
That's fair.
And, you know,
that's fair.
In my
opinion,
at
that's
least.
Fair. No, it's fair. Yeah. That's 100% fair. Yeah.
Yeah, to some community. It might speak more to, you know, middle section athlete, like more of the high school, you know, end players, like real players to get into that club versus, mm-hmm. you know, more general fan supporters around the other. You don't know how it's going to go really in terms of until it happens. I think 10 years from now, and honestly, probably like 3 or 4 years from now, we'll have a better idea of the trajectory they're headed. It's really interesting, though, to look at how they've set themselves up and the decisions yeah. they've made going into what's going to be the first weekend in which they both have converging
and
games.
Yeah, well, and what's funny is that you said 3 or 4 years from now, they will probably play this podcast back and be like, oh, my God, like, this is what they were talking about then, and here's how far we've come.
What's also interesting, too.
And your sponsorship.
Yeah. So I talked to Demba Ba, one of the
They're both playing in Liga MX at that point.
So I talked to Demba Ba, one of the bigger investors of 1904.
Yeah, one of the faces. Really.
One of the faces, yeah, like, former EPL player, now playing in Turkey. Clearly, he's
the guy, really.
Yeah. He is the dude behind 1904. And I asked him, like, this was I want to say it was last August or last September, and I asked him, I was just like, ooh, is there going to be a little bit of a rivalry? Like, what are your thoughts on, like, Landon's team? What are your thoughts on your team? And, like, he didn't, like, think twice about it. He was just like, well, San Diego's big enough. Why can't it support both teams? Yeah. And... Yeah. And like I get that. I definitely get that to this understanding of just like the city is big enough to support both of these. Like
the city is definitely large enough for both of these teams to exist and to coexist. I mean, yeah, there will be probably different types of people who are drawn to either side. Yep. But this concept of rivalry and this sort of like, you know, manufactured thing, like even, I mean, I have a couple different opinions about a lot of different things, but like even like this whole notion, like before either team is, I mean, in this case for Loyola, even kicked a ball, we're talking about who's our rival. Like that's an American thing.
Yeah.
That's very much like, who do we hate? And it's like, do you need to do that? Right. Like typically, you know, if you look at teams who have like rivalries, you know, across any different sport over time, it's because one time we played against them and this shit happened and we're not happy about it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And we want them to remember.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, yeah, the city's more than big enough, and I think time will tell.
Or historically, both being good. Your favorite team, United, they have it against Liverpool, not partially geographic, but mainly because they were both good and battling it out, and United got the better of Liverpool, so they just never let it go, and it goes both sides now, right? And
There's history, right? There's something to talk about. There's something to like look back on, and like, I think in some ways, a lot of the narrative about like all of this is cart before the horse, right? Because we've not yet kicked a ball.
It's very true. It's very true.
But like, here we are about to like witness it. And like, that's a cool thing. I think it's important to like kind of like be salient in this moment, to like take a moment and kind of just be like, hey, you know what? Like we're at a special time in history, realistically.
Yeah. Well, we do have a rival. It's Las Vegas and Eric Guinaldo and everything that they stand for.
And Orange County and Phoenix.
Hey, Landon and Bonaldo both told me that they feel like a rivalry could build. So,
Well, they're both markets that the league needs. I mean, Vegas is such a burgeoning sports market for all sports. They're one of the last cities that will build anything sports.
That's why they all want
the NBA's going there. Baseball's going to go there eventually.
They've got that. And they are a good market for this, and I think they have aspirations beyond USL as well. Mm-hmm. I think both of these clubs have aspirations for a top level, whether that's MLS or some future Premier USL league or whatever. But like there's aspiration. That's a whole other podcast. But but yeah, I think it'll be curious. I'm just curious to see where, you know, the next 6 months plays out. And I do think that there's a cool thing that we can have a rivalry, but it also can take place on the field within those 90 minutes. Yep. And it doesn't have to. And it can be fun off the field, but I don't think it has to become violent in the way that other supporters, you know, in other cultures have. And I think that's what's cool here is we have a chance to do it in a way that's creative and fun and almost trying to outwork each other as opposed to people trying to take digs at each other. And I think that that's what will ultimately win for both of these clubs to get people to their matches is genuinely just putting out a thing that people want, right?
And
so that's what's exciting is to see the competition in that level of on the field against other teams and then within the city to see how fans are attracted to different entities, whether it's this, whether it's the Seals, whether it's, you know, the Sockers as well, who are our friends, you know, that they're, you know, had a little bit of a down season this year in terms of attendance just because they've been on Sundays, right? So it's just a difficult day to get people in the arena. And so how do we, you know, generally get the beacon out about these things to all different sports fans? Because a lot of people I talk to them, they just go, I didn't know what was going on. Right?
That's because they don't subscribe to KKF United. So we just got to get them to do that.
How do we get that to come?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I'm curious the most about with the Loyal especially and, you know, all these things, it's like at what point does it switch from being this upstart thing to where fans, like the supporters and everybody, is actually critical of the organization? Like,
It's already happening.
I imagine that'll happen very quickly.
Critical,
happen very quickly.
Critical,
it's,
but
it's
like,
already happening. It's just
with the on-field product. I mean, like, are they gonna, you know, question if Landon can coach or something like that? You know, not that.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, I'll give it an entire full season before I really kind of digest any of that.
10 games. I think is
I think
really
it's like the minimal sample size to the point where you can say, hey, like I'm noticing a trend I'd maybe like to see it change. But like it takes
so
longer than 10 games to change a trend. Yeah.
The time frame is really 3 years, right? Because we have this deal with USD and you know, that'll be a real big measuring stick.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's 2 years confirmed with three option years actually. So it's two plus three. But yeah, I think that might be a more appropriate and prudent moment to judge them is at that point when they're looking to transition from this temporary venue to like a home, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when you can start asking the question of what does this team really mean, right? Who is it that we really are? Like, what is it that we've done? What kind of penetration have we achieved? And like, what are we hoping to then further achieve?
Mm-hmm. They're almost asking to be judged at that point based on the fact that they're looking for a stadium, right? They're saying at that point, hey, we're looking to set up shop somewhere more permanently and asking for a venue to call our own.
Yeah,
what's it worth to the city to create that space for us? And whether that's, you know, private or whatever, but what is it worth in terms of capital, in terms of people, interests, you know, viewership, all of that at that point goes into that decision, right? Whether it's you know downtown smack in the middle of everything because that costs more because the interest is there, or is it a little bit outside because you know that's you know more that, passably yeah,
who
their
where,
interest lies
sit.
In, you know at that point. So that's what will be interesting. I think on the field, as you said, I think for me it's about 10 games that you really see any sort of trend, as DK said, at all. But overall, 3 years too. They also have the Stone deal that goes through 3 years, I think, as well. So certain things like that just marketing-wise, to see how those reach their fulfillment over that period of time. Like in the first season, I'm sure they're just firing at the hip, like whatever they can figure out. In the second season, do they come out with a scaled marketing campaign that involves some more cool stuff? Or
so much of everything.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's all benchmarking right now. And so like, let's get through the first cycle. Let's take a pause.
That's
like,
partially why they chose to run with 2020 anyway versus 2021. Yeah. It's just so to get the ball on the field.
Yeah, get the data.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get out there and let's play a game.
So you're saying this is like a soft open of sorts. Yeah.
In the grand scheme.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, you go.
How we do anything is how we do everything. Yeah. So that's their motto, right? And that's been their motto since day one is we want to do it the right way. It doesn't matter that it's 2020 versus 2021. We want to do it the right way. And sometimes that means holding back a certain color of jersey because we didn't feel like it was exactly right, right?
You're talking about Torrey Green.
Yeah, exactly. But like, but in their fairness, those jerseys look amazing. And I don't think they needed it at this point because those other ones were done very, very well. And they did them correctly, but like it's tough to make those kind of decisions and hold things back when you know that it'll sell really well as well. So to that point is how much of that quality control versus meeting market demand and meeting people where they're at are you going to be at? And so that's the tough part in 2020 is to feel that being having a plan and then being able to throw that plan away quickly and then shift to something else, which I think they've done a couple times and shown they can do, but continually doing that to where you meet the market where it wants to be, which I think 1904 did a good job after last season of figuring out where that is and doing a great job of doing that. It'll be up to Loyal to kind of do that on the fly almost. And then I think because there's higher stakes for the kind of investment they're making. But on top of that, you know, moving forward, the aspirations they have to scale up from there, right? Because I think by the end of the season, they would like to be sold out every game and have that kind of rolling on, right? But
by the start of the season.
Let's start the season with that to begin with. So that's the hard part is just getting the word out that it's happening, that there is a season, that it's watchable on CW and all those kind of things, right, that have come along a little later than you would have expected.
That caught me off
guard.
It's on CW?
Yeah, it'll be on CW.
That completely caught me off guard. Like, I knew I would be able to watch games on
One
like
Tree
ESPN
Hill.
Plus. And I was like, all right, do I have CW?
Yeah, they've been CBS tied at the hip. So I think they'll simulcast a couple on CBS because they get the same news organization or whatever. But they're on the CW. But that came out in the last week, right? And that's something you might have expected a little bit sooner than that if it was a little bit more of a drawn-out kind of process to this team. But because they shotgunned it a little bit, looking at a shorter kind of run-up, it's partially that. But they've also gotten market research back of stuff that I've totally seen them overthink that, like, didn't land. And because they moved with it quickly and it didn't work, they've moved on very quickly, right? And so because of that, it allows them to not make mistakes that perpetuate, you know, in a think tank, and get out in front of the people. The most successful stuff they've done so far, in my opinion, has been the stuff they get out and get people in front of. So,
that's it. Sorry.
Oh, you got the stream up?
No.
Where it will be? Yes.
That's
very official when it's
Travis
on YouTube
just
TV.
Pulled up his phone.
Oh, so it's on there, and then it's on. It'll be on ESPN Plus for all the matches. So I mean, it's the access to this is definitely great. 1904 will be on MyCujo again this year.
Yeah. So I talked to I mean, we don't have to talk about 1904 MyCujo like in too much detail. Sure. I actually talked to the people who run MyCujo. So they're trying to standardize more of their process right now. I mean, if there are people out there who are actually listening to this, because they're actually probably like, perhaps like people who are actually listeners who are 1904 fans who are a little bothered about the standardization process where it was like literally some guy just like perhaps just like recording with this like cell phone. They are trying to like, if you do watch NEAS, if you do watch 1904, there is talks of trying to standardize that process for this season. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And you know, you have an event on Friday, right?
Oh, sorry.
Yes, we do. So
let's
we got
talk
that.
About that. After Bridge Barricada.
Yeah. So there's we're calling it One Day More, but essentially it's just meeting up at Barrio Logan's Thorn Brewing, mm-hmm. and so down there, and it's got a space upstairs for us that they're gonna let us hang out and bang some drums and sing a little bit, and so from 5 through when they close-ish. I'm just sure people being hanging out through close-ish, but the main kind of hangouts probably from like 5 to like 7, 8-ish. We'll be just kind of hanging out and then trying to do some chant song rehearsals for anybody who wants to learn the songs, or just come down, and if you haven't come out yet, meet people, hang out, and then the next day we roll again at 4 p.m. Getting the tailgate pregame, whatever you want to call it, but it's happening north of Jenny Craig Pavilion there. Just show up early to that for sure and bring cash. So those are my kind of two plugs. So Friday, okay. Thorn Brewing starting at 5 p.m. and at Bridge Barricada we have 4:30 over at Chicano Park. Yeah, the place that I go every Friday. So yeah, Chicano Park. And then so if you do want to come out and play and then drink and sing, you can do all that on a Friday. And then Saturday again we're getting rolling at 4 p.m. there. So show up and really do analyze your parking situation, get all of that figured out before you get in the car. It is a little bit more layered and detailed than you'd want it to be at USD if you're coming on Saturday. There's usually structures that involve shuttles and all that sort of nonsense.
You actually have a pretty good rundown on your podcast.
We
don't
almost
you? Yeah.
Do, yeah. And we do plan on putting out another one on Friday. So as we've discussed, putting out podcasts is difficult on a schedule, but we do plan on putting out one out Friday but last week's also works as well.
I was going to do a clip package of this, but we'll just plug your podcast is the Locals podcast.
Loyal
Local podcast. And then there's the Fair Weather pod, which Alan Underwood's doing with Marissa.
That's a great pod. Yeah,
yeah, it's really good.
And Chris from New Mexico.
Yeah, so check out all those pods. Are you going to bring back the
Finest City Football podcast? Will be present in the future.
Okay. Well, yeah, check out all these pods because I mean,
the Fairweather podcast will return.
I want to see some results first. That's it.
We've just been collecting information this entire time.
Just waiting for the win. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, check. That's a good way to get involved and kind of get up to speed with a new team. It's just. Check out all the pods that have emerged. You know,
yeah, it's crazy.
There's a scene.
We were talking about them on the way over here. He was like, yeah, we just took a month of doing other stuff. And we looked around and there's already 2 or 3 other ones just sprouting up out of the ground. And there's a few other kind of more organic ones, too, that have just bubbled up all of a sudden. So.
It's definitely important, too, just to kind of have that kind of like community kind of like feel about this podcast, about the soccer community.
Creates culture.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, like I made a joke online about a scarf, and now that's proliferated other podcasts and created an in-person bit and joke that's now spanned over multiple things. That creates culture, and that's how you get things like Padres Twitter being as amazing as it is now.
It's so massive now.
It's a juggernaut.
And your show, crazy. You had an episode this week, right? The Mexican Soccer Show?
The Mexican Soccer
Nice.
Show. Yeah, no, talk every Monday, sometimes Tuesdays, about just Mexican soccer in general, whether it be about prominent MLS players in the league, whether it be Mexicans abroad, whether it be about Liga MX, and I mean, we've been doing that. I mean, I want to say it's about 6 or 7 years.
I was
going to
say since before I met you.
I know, right? Yeah. Wow. We've been doing it for quite
some
time.
It's a well-polished machine.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
Well, good content.
Well, also, I got to say, you know, we do a Seals podcast, Seal City SD, and one thing that we talk about a lot is how the Seals could do a better job of watch parties.
Oh.
I gotta say the locals or whatever they did, was it locals?
Loyal put it together. And so yeah, we plugged it for them. And so we filled it mostly with our people as we tend to do. Yeah.
You guys have the belt for the watch party, the away game watch party, I think at Stone.
It was just our first one. So
it was better than what the Seals have done.
What if you invite an actual Seal? I mean, I know PETA might not be 100% on board with
I don't understand it because Joe Tsai is the richest San Diegan by far, and he doesn't just buy out a bar. Just like he could throw money around,
build a bar.
Yeah, he could just give people free drinks and they'd be
literally,
fans
literally hire numerous SEALs.
Yeah,
to just
he
like,
could.
Yeah, he could actually serve the drinks.
Yeah, he could train.
Yeah, I was gonna say, be trained. Yeah,
he could do it with an email.
On their nose and just like
He could do it with an email. He gets stuff done. I love you, Joe.
Does he listen to this? Do you think he listens to this?
Not this one.
I'll tag him.
Do you think he hires somebody to listen to all your stuff?
Do you want me to tag him after this? I'll tag him.
I tag him all the time.
He's probably got an AI that crawls for
him. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But,
you know, we try, but we want to get him on eventually.
That would be a cue. Yeah. But I think overall, the cool part is the ownership. You did mention Soccer City up at the top, but I would say the cool part about Loyal, too, is that their ownership has been very true. And same with 1904, too, listening to people and trying to get into the fans. And so you do know the exact names and people that are behind that. Yeah. I think we've all had different conversations. And, like, honestly, if you wanted to talk to either one, I could set up a conversation with you and those people. And that's what I think has been really cool.
Cool. Yeah. Well, you know, thanks for listening to TKF United. Thanks for coming on, Caesar. And
of course,
TK and Drew. So, check out all the pods and check everybody out on Twitter. We'll be back next week with a baseball podcast. Who cares?
Hey, you guys are trending up. A lot of winning.
Yeah, we are.
Why are you guys so sad? You're winning a bunch.
It's the Cactus League.
Is there a prediction you guys are going to qualify for the playoffs? Is that a thing, qualify for the playoffs? Is that a thing that people say?
To get a wild card, I think.
Oh, really?
Is that higher or lower than usual?
It's better than...
Way better than ever.
Yeah.
But does that mean you go to the Champions League, or does that mean you go to Europa League if that doesn't work?
They go to the World Baseball Classic, actually.
We'll have you back on, Caesar. We should talk about relegation in baseball, because it needs it bad.
The Chihuahuas would be up here now, yeah.
Yeah, no, the Dodgers are the smartest, best organization in baseball, and we can never top them.
Basically. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And we're the bizarro Dodgers.
Yeah, we're the weird, we're the crazy picture in the family photo. so that's going to be bleak. See you next week, Travis. All right, support the Loyal, and we'll...
Come have a fun time. It's a new, fresh thing. You don't have any preconceptions, right? Not years of pain or anything, so it's fun. It's fresh, it's new, and we'll create new memories of joy and happiness together.
Maybe next time we'll come back and talk some stadium talk.
Yeah. Dive deep into
Let's finish it.
I'm going to go put a shovel in the ground just to say somebody did,
Somebody,
and take a picture. Yeah.
What are the pond plans? I have to know.
Okay. I'll do my research and I'll be prepared.
All right. We'll see you next week. Bye.
TKF United.